Welcome to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk, and thank you to Rightful Liberty Arms for sponsoring the show. Hey, I was just down there chatting with Michael at Rightful Liberty Arms. Man, if he doesn't have it in the shop, he can get it. He's got some ammo coming for me, so go check them out before we get into the full swing of summer shooting season. Switching gears, Dave, I want to talk a little bit of archery stuff. It's not necessarily housekeeping, but seems like every time I log into Instagram, I see more and more dates getting posted for archery shoots coming up.
Yeah, we're coming up on the end of indoor season and the beginning of outdoor, so folks are hot to trot. Yeah.
Yep. Did you make it to the Winnemucca shoot back, what was that, last weekend or
something?
Yeah,
I did not. The reason being is because my Seahawks.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
My Seahawks won the Super Bowl, and they did the Winnemucca 450 during the Super Bowl. So I figured, you know what? I'll let Frickhoffer have it this year.
Did he win?
Yes, I think he did.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, he's shooting solid this year. Frickhoffer's on fire.
Well, hey, so. I'm sorry, DJ and Tina, but it's a busy weekend, man. I did not make it up for it either.
Yeah.
So, but I always think of that shoot as kind of the... locally. Now I know we've still got like Vegas to go and there's some big,
yeah, and
like
there's Memphis, the Nationals indoors, Memphis at the end of, or the beginning of March, but there's
for
a
local
mix there.
Stuff though. Indoor is kind of phasing out.
You've got the indoor state championship that'll be going on January, February.
Right. Yeah.
But that's it. Right. You know, and that's like, that's a mail-in.
Mm-hmm.
That's that one. And there's no real place in the area in here to work with and do those like every 3 months, like USA Archery and stuff,
right.
Do the mail-in competitions, which right. They're a lot of fun. There's just not a venue large enough or several venues to actually put those on. But yeah, so February, March is that transition from doing a little bit of indoor, but transitioning into the 3D outdoor and the FITA stuff.
Which is my jam. That's what I'm looking forward
jam.
To.
Yeah, yes. It's going to be a good time.
Do you have dates for any of that stuff?
Yeah. So local, I mean, the local stuff, you've got the, starting off is the indoor 3D, which is kind of a mix, indoor and 3D.
Yeah.
And those have become really popular. So there is the Elko one coming up here in March, not dead sure on the date. So that kind of sucks that I don't know exactly the date. Then April 5th and 6th is the Fallon Bowman, the Rafter shootout.
Yes,
there in Fallon, that thing is awesome. Then go into the next weekend is the Yerington, the Walker River Bowman outdoor 3D. Then we go into the beginning of May, May 6th through July 22nd is the Silver Arrow Bowman, their Wednesday League.
Outdoor
league.
That's right. Yeah. Okay.
Right. And I kind of call this one a local one because, you know, everyone talks about it and a lot of us all go to it is the Redding shoot.
Yeah.
It's pseudo kind of sort of, you know, but that's the first weekend of May.
Correct.
But
yeah.
Then you go into the Fallon Bowman, the Ram shoot, which is May 16th and 17th. And then you have the Silver Arrow Bowman Bonanza, which is May 30th and 31st. And this year, with the Bowhunter Bonanzas, they're going to have a ASA course.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, they're going to toss an ASA course in there.
Very cool.
Kind of get to see how people feel about it and the flavor of it. So,
and that's going to be what, like an additional shoot to the Bonanza?
I'm not sure. I think it is. I think it's going to be like an additional off to the side, go and shoot it type of a thing. But I'm not entirely sure. I think they're going to have, they're still going to do their orange dot shoot for the Bonanza, but
Winnemucca does an indoor 3D thing.
Yeah. So the Winnemucca one is also in March.
Yeah. Like March 13th or something.
I think it's, March 13th and 14th is going to be the Winnemucca indoor, and that's the kickoff. And then I think the week before that is the Elko indoor.
Okay. I don't know what it is about that weekend. I'm batting 1,000 with Winnemucca shoots this year. I'm going to be on a trip with my daughter during that time. So this is going to be the second year in a row that I'll miss that Winnemucca indoor shoot, unfortunately, because I like that shoot.
You're going to miss the Winnemucca one. Dang it, man.
Yep. I'm traveling. If I can soapbox for a minute, here's one of my big gripes about, and I don't know, maybe this is like across the states, everybody gripes about the same stuff.
Yeah.
It's like such a scattershot release of dates And as soon as Christmas and New Year's is over, at my house, we're lining up with four kids. We're like, okay, we've got this month. We've got this month, da-da-da-da-da. And I always try to check the club pages and all that. And okay, where's this shoot? When's this shoot? So on and so forth. I know because of the Reading dates, I'm like, okay, this week I'm blocked out for Reading. But yeah, I lined up a trip thinking, okay, I can squeak this one in. And then sure enough, I saw the Winnemucca dates and went, oh man,
yeah.
I've already got flights. I've got a hotel. I got the whole thing lined up. Well, I will be out of the state.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Perfect. No, that blows. That yep. blows. But it does happen. I mean, I'm going to go back to the Elko Indoor.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's actually February 21st and 22nd. So it's coming up here.
Oh, yeah. Next week.
Yeah.
Or this coming week, basically. Yeah.
So, yeah. So, and that's during Foley. So I won't be at that one. I'll be in Foley, Alabama for the ASA shoot. But then the March 13th through the 15th is the Winnemucca Indoor, and that's when you're gone.
I'm gone, yeah.
So, you know, we'll cover as many shoots as we possibly can.
I'll make the Fallon season. Stuff for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But
well, this year I will get to do the Fallon Ram shoot.
Oh, very cool.
It'll be the first year in 3 years that they haven't done it during a time that I'm out of town.
Traveling.
Yeah. Traveling for other shoots or family stuff. So
yeah, life has a way of catching up and eating up my time.
Yeah, trying to put all this stuff onto a calendar as all these dates start pumping out. That's one thing I've been trying to do lately in the last week or so as everyone's starting to post their shoots.
Yeah.
Like, okay, which ones can I get to? Which ones interfere with other shoots, you know, because I'm meeting Timmy and the guys for a couple different shoots around the country.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, okay, that one's a bust. Nope, that one's not going to work. But anyway.
Are you going to post those on the Range to Ridge website?
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to be posting that stuff on Range to Ridge as well. And I'll be doing a bunch of the commission updates because there's a bunch of archery stuff coming up that it's going to be in the commission.
Okay.
So like coming up in May, I'll be doing a presentation at the commission for removing the 80% lead off on archery equipment.
Dave, I think we talked about doing that last weekend and we never got to it about that.
Yeah. So I finally ran my proposal through to the DAG and to the commission and they want to hear it. So
back
now,
up a sec. What's DAG?
That's the AG, the Attorney General.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it has to go through them because it's a regulation change. So, and they approved it and they want a presentation on it.
Okay.
So I'll be doing that in May. And that commission meeting is in Reno here.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. Cause I could have done it in this next commission in March.
Right.
I don't want to go to Boulder City.
No. So, I don't blame you one bit on that.
I don't want to go to Boulder City. So.
So hang on one sec. With the time we have left, your proposal is to do away with it entirely.
Yes, completely do away with the 80% lead off that is in our regulations for archery equipment.
Right.
And the reason being is 46 of our states, so there's only four states that still have a lead off requirement.
Montana, Idaho, Nevada, who else?
Washington.
Oh, Washington. Okay.
Yeah. And I think it's Montana or Colorado have a proposal to remove theirs in their next cycle.
It's got
to
be Montana. I thought Colorado did away with theirs.
Yeah. I've been researching all of this.
Okay.
But yeah, so they're proposing to remove theirs.
Good.
So yeah. So, you know, and it kind of goes along with the change that they're proposing for the archery disability permit, removing crossbows entirely out of the regulation or the requiring the permit. Because, you know, lowering that or not having a let off allows people with some disabilities to still be able to draw a bow and hold it.
Absolutely.
You know? And the thing is there is a survey done. It'll be in the presentation, but there's a survey done in relation to archers and asking them about their let off. Do they know what it is and all of this? And the numbers are just crazy.
Oh, I bet.
It's nuts. So creating a bunch of individuals that don't realize that they're actually breaking the law.
100%. Yeah.
And it's, you know, the bows are coming out at 80% right out of the box from the factory. And some companies
90%, are 90%. Yeah.
And, you know, they buy them offline or from a business that, you know, isn't going to express the need for an 80%. Because then that's extra cost. You got to get mods or you got to get something else for the bow. But anyway, I think it just needs to be removed. Yeah. And there's a lot of support for it.
If I set up a booth outside the front door to Hunting House and took a poll with people walking out, I can picture the guys in my mind who would know what it is to the percent.
Oh, yeah.
And then I guarantee 95%+ of the people walking out there would go, what?
Yeah.
Chandler set it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Chandler got it set up. Yeah. And the beauty is Hunting House does let people know, hey, in the state of Nevada, if you're going to hunt with this, 80% right. is the law. So then he explains the mods that have to be done. It's part of the survey. They kind of go through beginning archers to intermediate archers to what I call the geek squads.
The
geek archers.
Don't sue us, Best Buy.
Yeah, right. Which, you know, you ask them and they're going to tell you down to the gnat's booty.
Like, oh, exactly.
What their let off is.
Yeah.
For each one of their bows, because they generally have 4 or 5 of them. That's all the kind right. of stuff going on.
Well, cool. Hey, we got to take a quick break. Do not go anywhere. More coming up next on Nevada Backcountry. Hey, welcome back to Nevada Backcountry, brought to you by Shooting Performance Institute. Summer shooting season is coming up. Get your ammo and supplies at Rifle Liberty Arms, and then go get the training you need with Jim down at Shooting Performance Institute. For those of you listening and going, oh no, it's an archery show, we're going to get into wolves. We're going to get into a little bit of Pyramid Lake stuff if yep. we have time. I caught my neighbor slipping out of his driveway this morning with this weather rolling in that we've been having. He thinks now is the time to get it while the getting's good out at Pyramid. So I know everybody's antsy to get out there for that stuff. One last little thing on archery. I told Dave I was going to put him on the spot. And I'm not going to name any names. But... What do you do? You're a level 3 coach.
Yeah.
I mean, I know this is difficult. It's like diagnosing a car problem over the phone. When people hit that like first year plateau or the dip, they've been shooting for a year. Maybe they're shooting pretty consistently, like mid 80s on a Vegas face.
Right.
And then all of a sudden they're all over the place and you can't figure out what in the world they're doing. What do you have them shoot, or what do you look for? What are some of the most common issues that people experience at that point in their archery career?
Generally, that'll come down to the beginning stages of a target panic.
Okay.
So they've gotten themselves comfortable
yep.
with shooting. They feel that they're pretty darn good for being such a beginner, and they'll get into a comfort zone
mm-hmm.
where they will start to punch it. They don't realize they're doing it, but they're punching it.
Okay.
They also, one thing is they'll start getting a little sloppy on their form consistency.
Again, go back to basics.
So basically, you know, you'd want to watch what they're doing a couple times and check out where things are changing. Have them shoot like 10 arrows
mm-hmm.
and just kind of watch how they're shooting and really pinpoint some of their differences like palm position, palm pressure, shoulder parallel to the arrow during full draw, you know, when they're at full draw into the anchor. Make sure the anchor is still in the same location. Make sure that, you know, on one shot they're drawn right into it and their peep is dead on and they're just head stays steady, and the next time they're flopping their head around looking for the peep. So there's all of these little things that they start to do, is what we call the bad habits. Once they start getting a little comfortable, like, yeah, I do really well. I just started and I'm like
shooting lights out.
Shooting awesome for a beginner. I'm in the 270s and beginning of the 280s. But then they hit that point where they're not breaking out of that 270, 280 mark. And maybe their X's are starting to drop off.
Yep. And maybe then, they're dropping back into the low 70s.
Exactly. Then they start, you know, declining into the lower 70s. And maybe once in a while they're punching a 260, and then the frustration kicks in. And without knowing what's causing the frustration, they fold like a Walmart lawn chair.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Yeah. So it's trying to keep that together and keeping it to progress forward. You need to analyze the shooting process.
All right.
Yeah.
Good to know for that random unnamed person that maybe was on a solid uphill trajectory this whole time. And then the last 2-3 weeks, we've been making jokes about it, this unnamed person and I, because
that you may or may not live with.
Yeah. Yeah. That I'm shooting really, really well, about the best I've ever shot consistently. And it's like we traded powers. And somebody's going downhill and I'm like, yeah. So anyway.
When somebody starts in archery, they get super focused. And the mental game is enormous archery, the mental game. When they first start, man, they're focused. They're like, okay, I've got to do this and I've got to do this. And then I got to bring it back this way. And they're really, really thinking about their form.
Everything.
And that's the mental game that they are building. Then, like we said, then they get super comfortable. Like, dude, I'm crushing it. I'm kicking this guy's butt next to me. Blah, 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 blah. They start kind of leaking that mental game.
Okay.
And they just get into a comfort pattern.
It's like muscle memory and they're not thinking it through anymore.
Right. And then they just start just leaking out the mental game and they just kind of fold.
Gotcha.
So, yep.
Let's switch gears, Dave. We'll really dive into this next segment, but let's go ahead and you want to do the wolf thing real quick.
Yeah.
Because, man, this is all I hear about on the news right now.
Well, and rightly so, because it is becoming, it's kind of like not the perfect storm, but they had those few wolves in the Sierra Valley there that were attacking cattle and sheep.
And a horse, too.
And a horse that happened last year or so. And finally, the California Fish and Game went in. They tried all these different deterrents to scare the wolves off. Kicker is once wolves get established and they have the four elements that they need to have a designated area,
right?
It's almost impossible to get rid of them.
Yeah.
Or deter them away.
Right.
So, they ended up going out and killing all of them.
Right.
I think there were four. Well, now here we are a year later, and now another group has come in and attacked a pregnant sheep. A calf, and recently something else.
I think there was another horse. They had to euthanize the horse. I think that was just January 8th somewhere. That first week of January, they hit that that rancher's horse, the family horse. Yeah.
So there's that going on. And then we have this young male that's collared that has shown up in the Truckee area and then into Nevada.
Yes.
The Carson Range and that whole area. So there's a lot of discussion on what in the world is going on.
You're really, really good about going to these wildlife commission meetings.
Right.
Have wolves been discussed?
Not really, no.
Okay.
No, it hasn't been discussed because it hasn't really gotten into the wheelhouse. Like, it hasn't really become an issue in the state of Nevada.
Right.
You know, if you go back, gray wolves were eradicated from California in the 20s.
Right.
You know, and that was due to predation and hunting in general. Then in, 2011 or so, they got reintroduced and the first pack was created or established.
Yeah.
And since then, now there's multiple packs throughout Northern California and they're just expanding like crazy.
Yeah.
And that's where, we're starting to see the impacts of that, because now we've got packs in Idaho, we've got packs in Oregon, Northern California, all along our edges.
Right.
And so the big talk is what are they doing and where they're going and how are they getting there? So right now, some of the locations of these packs and the territories of these packs are the Northern Sierra and Sierra Valley, which are that group that's causing a lot of hate and discontent. The Tahoe, High Sierra, and the Truckee region.
Yep.
The Carson Range and surrounding areas. Now, these aren't packs. These are just locations where they've been seen.
Right. Confirmed. This is a wolf.
Here we are. The Sequoia area, the Southern Sierras, and the other one is the Tahoma County.
Okay.
Tahoma County area that there's a core pack area. That's becoming a core pack area.
Okay.
So these are all areas where they're either transitioning through, traveling through, or they're looking to find those elements that will help them build a pack.
Like you pointed out, and like in this story, once they find that, it's not like you can get rid of those wolves, but with the number roaming the landscape right now, if it meets all those, or it checks all those boxes for this is what we need, this is where we want to be, you can get rid of the pack that's there now. it's going to be filled in by some, by another roaming band or roaming pack
within
months.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's certain core elements that these traveling wolves are looking for in order to establish these packs. And if those elements aren't found, they're going to move on.
Right.
So, and people are like, well, how far can wolves actually travel? Like,
oh, we did that on the show one time.
Right, yeah.
Thousands of miles.
Yeah, I mean, your most common, the most common is roughly, you know, around 300 miles if they're in adequate habitats. And
right.
They're just, you know, and it's generally a young male will be the one who's taken off looking for these elements. You know, the more common, it's not really, and it's not rare, but longer distances are anywhere from 500 to 1,000 miles. There have been several wolves that have been collared that have traveled in excess of 1,500 miles.
Well, remember when we started talking about wolves on the show, and I'm looking at the clock, so we got to wrap up. We'll get more into wolves next segment, but there was that one collared male that did something ridiculous, like close to 3,000 miles.
Yeah, that was the one of the first ones released back in 2011. He was called OR7 or Oregon 7.
Okay.
And he was way up near the Oregon-Washington border.
Okay.
And he ended up in the lower portion of Northern California. He ended up
he did a huge loop.
He went down through Oregon, then he went back up into Idaho, then he circled around into Idaho, came back into Oregon, and then dropped down into that portion of California where he finally established a pack.
All right.
So, but yeah, they traveled well over 1,500, 2,000
miles. It was something ridiculous. Yeah. I remember looking at it and going, holy moly, man.
Yeah, because he started in Northern Oregon and ended up in California before establishing that pack, which is just bonkers.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, let's pause really quick. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, welcome back to Nevada Backcountry, 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thank you to Battleborn Tree Service for sponsoring the show. Man, we're just coming out of, gosh, only our second winter storm or so. Make sure you get in touch with Mike and the crew and get any damaged trees cleaned up. Let's hop right back into wolves, Dave. Over the break, we got talking about the mileage that one wolf we were chatting about.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to throw out a number because I couldn't exactly remember, but I remember it was just seemed extremely high. It was about 2,400 miles is what that wolf did in a big loop, basically. What in the world causes a wolf to do? I mean, why?
So the reason they're traveling so far is because of limited resources. So they're looking for certain criteria before they decide to start sticking around.
And in 24 months, maybe he was kind of terrible at finding good resources.
Who knows? Yeah, right. You know, so usually, you know, the things that they're truly looking for is an unoccupied or lightly occupied territory.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Because
males will push each other. So, I mean, packs will push each other or fight each other.
So if he bumped into a pack on his walkabout.
Yeah.
He's going.
He boogied. He's like, okay, time to keep going.
Gotcha.
Another one is adequate prey.
Right.
So if they don't, if there's not enough for them to sustain or to maintain a pack, they're going to keep moving.
Okay.
That's it. They're just going to go. A mate, because you got to build the pack, can't order it from China.
Yeah.
And then low human pressure. So if those four things aren't in play in the area they are, only one of those has to be missing and they're gone. And they're going to keep cruising until they can find that. So that's one thing where they say, like, Nevada may not be a great place for a pack to really be established unless they're
that's what I was going to ask you, Dave.
Right, up in that northern area maybe where we have, like, really good elk numbers and antelope numbers and stuff. They don't generally prey on antelope because
that seems like a tall order even for a wolf.
Yeah, you'd have to be like the Carl Owens of wolves.
Yeah.
So other than that, I mean, the prey base, really, it would be tough. As well as, you know, they have to have really good den sites or, you know, habitat. That's part of that habitat thing is the den sighting. So, yeah, so that's why they're going to keep moving. They're going to keep traveling until they locate that.
How many times have I said it on the show? First wolf I saw in Nevada 10 plus years ago now was in one of those northern, I mean, it's close enough that it probably came in from Idaho, and yeah. it was in an area with a substantial elk herd in it.
Yeah.
It was probably just cruising through. I can't see, I mean, even holy smokes, if they made it all the way down to that Ely area out there. Yeah, our elk herds are doing good, but you're not talking like Colorado numbers
no,
or, you know,
or Wyoming so, or yeah, any of that yeah. kind of stuff. Yeah. So, you know, in that eastern part of Nevada, you're generally getting wolves from the Northern California
okay.
packs, Idaho, Oregon, and even Northern Rockies.
Oh, them, okay.
You know, they're dispersing.
Gotcha.
And they're just using Nevada as right now as like a corridor to kind of
pass through,
check it out, see what the what is. Pretty much all that have been anecdotally observed from okay. hunters and outdoors people, and then the Department of Wildlife goes out and investigates it, it's like they're already gone.
Right.
I mean, you give them a day, and like some of the stats on wolves is like how fast can they travel? Okay, they're covering some of these things are covering vast areas. How well are they doing that? Well, on a typical day, they can travel anywhere from 15 to 30 miles if conditions are good. Like
okay.
they have a little bit of prey to keep their energy up, and they have some of the resources and the human pressure is, and they're able to get in and out of areas with little to no pressure.
Mm-hmm.
In shorter bursts, if they're feeling like they're coming into an edge of a city, like the urban interface areas, or they're having to cross highways or, you know, stuff like that, they can go as many as 50 to 60 miles in a day when they're really beaten feet to be like, okay, I need to get out of here because these upright things are freaking me out, you know.
They're always shooting at me.
Yeah, they're shooting at me.
What's going on?
And then these things with bright things in front of them, and they're going, man, yeah. they keep hitting my friends. You know, so they can really cover some distance.
Sierra Valley up there, where all these problems are going on. I mean, it's not what I would call like densely populated. It's not like it's hard to come across ranches and people and everything. Why do they keep setting up there?
Great prey source.
That's what. So it's like a sliding scale. If they've got great prey, they'll ignore the human stuff.
Well, and they've got great cover. It's very thick.
Yeah, it's a good point.
So they can stay. Oh, they can stay out of vision. They can stay out of the view.
Okay.
And you know, you've got a lot of people raising cattle there, sheep there. You know, pigs, all kinds of different things that they're like, dude, these things are contained.
Right.
I mean, this is pretty easy.
It's tied to a stake for me.
Right. Yeah. And they also have deer and elk and,
right.
and stuff in that area. The heavy, heavy cover, great tree cover, great habitat, narrow canyons, deep canyons, great places to den up. And they can create pretty decent territories because it's not big, flat, wide open areas where you're going to have a lot of confrontation with pack number A or pack number B.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, this is our zone.
They can be geographically isolated,
right.
not that far apart.
Yeah, and they can have a pack that's just over the mountain that stays there because they've got the things they need over there.
Okay.
That's why they dig that area. I mean, that's why another group has already come in and filled the space where those other four
got eradicated
out. I mean, it's just how it is.
I mean, look, it's in the news right now. It's kind of a hot button topic right now, especially in Nevada. And you're saying there's nothing being discussed in wildlife commissions yet, or?
No, because there's nothing being established here. Everything that they've noticed in the state of Nevada have just been transient wolves moving through the area. Because when staff goes back out to these locations where they've either had pictures of animals or sightings from hunters and people who are outdoors on a regular basis, that where you feel like, okay, these people know what they're talking about. You know, it's not the city dweller who barely gets out of town and they misidentify an orange cat as a mountain lion. We're not talking about those individuals.
Right.
So, you know, staff goes out in the helicopters or what have you, and they'll put up trail cameras, you know, whatever it might be. And there's no detections. They're not finding anything. So in turn, it's like, okay, transient. They're just moving through the area.
Okay.
So until something's like actually established, like seen on a regular basis, things like that, where it becomes something like, hey, this is now on our radar. So now what needs to be done? In the background, there is conversation, just not at the commission, but there are conversations going on in relation to, okay, what happens when this happens.
There's where I wanted to go with it, Dave, because right. I was going to say, if the population is increasing around us,
exactly,
we don't, to me as a layperson, I go, well, at some point they're going to find something, a mountain range they like, and they're going to set up.
Or they're going to be in close enough proximity to the border that they're going to be like day hunting.
Oh, yeah, just and crossing just coming over.
Because of the opportunity that may be available to them in, say, Area 6 or Area 7 or 8 or 9 or, you know, what have you, 151, whatever it might be. They may just come over for a day or two or three and do some hunting and then go back to where their primary location is. So there's a lot of factors. There are a lot of variables switching around, and those are being discussed in other areas, in other circles.
Like, just not at the Wildlife Commission yet.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be elevated to that at this point in time. You know, it's not like, hey, this is hot button item, but when that does become, or, you know, if it does become, there's already conversation. There's already something there to say, okay, now we're taking it to the commission and here's what we have.
What about like identified potential ranges? Because as I sit here thinking about this, there's one range in particular that's near and dear to my heart. I love it. Coming from the cheap seats, I think it checks all the boxes as far as prey availability. There's about three canyons in there that I can think of that are roadless that nobody goes back into. It seems to me like, man, if a wolf pack got in there, they would absolutely set up shop. So is there any of that discussion going on as far as like, you know, we should keep our eye on XYZ?
Yeah. So there are definitely probability maps being probability maps that are established or at least being refined, you know. And so those become areas where during survey events, those become a little bit hotter.
Real good look at this.
You may address it more than once or twice during a season. Like, we need to put a little more effort into this one or more eyes on this one because of this potential. So that is, that's
comforting at least.
I mean, realistically, we don't want them to come in and start doing what wolves do.
Setting up shop and wreaking havoc.
Because as we saw from the California side over there in Sierra Valley, that once they were established and they were doing the damage they were doing to the ranching community, it took over a year for them to actually say, okay, yep, we've tried everything, so now we'll go out and euthanize them. But by then, they've already done so much financial damage to these ranchers and their livelihood that recovering wasn't easy for them.
Yeah.
You know, and when you talk a steer is $4,000.
Plus,
and they're losing several of them. I mean, I don't know about you, but somebody goes to my bank account and drains out, you know,
$4,000 at a pop, and they do it for a year. I'm in trouble.
Yeah. I'm going to be in trouble, you know, feeding the family and everything.
Let's take a quick break. Do not go anywhere. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry is coming up in a minute. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday. If you miss any of our wolf rants, our feral horse rants, any of our rants over the years, you can go to 991fmtalk.com, click on the podcast tab, and everything we've ever done is archived there. You can fact check us at leisure. Couple more things on the wolf deal, and then I think we'll transition. We'll get a little pyramid stuff in there as well. Final thoughts on the wolf subject. What you got for me?
I was just going to kind of go through or maybe hit upon the wolf sightings we have had in the state.
Oh, you know, good call.
In the last few years. So the most recent one was March of 24, and it was investigated by the Department of Wildlife. Possible sighting. They call it a possible sighting because nothing was confirmed, but it was at Merritt Mountain near Elko. I can't remember if that was the one where all those pictures were coming out on the internet of two or three.
I think it was
kind of cruising around.
Yeah.
So the department had gone out there and was checking out some of the tracks where people said, no, they came right through this particular area, went up there and checked out tracks, and they surveyed the tracks. They had trail cameras out. They ran the helicopters, never came up with wolves, lots of coyotes through some of the tracks and some of the materials and scat that they had found during this, it was determined that these were, what they came up with was coyotes.
Oh, because, no kidding.
Yeah, because, I mean, they didn't see anything. And so they're going to locations where people said, yeah, here's a picture and that right there. And there's the trailhead and blah, blah, blah. So when they went out and they saw the tracks, measured them, and then they found scat, to pick it up and checked it for DNA and found hair and what have you. Everything that they came across came back as coyote. Now, that doesn't mean what was seen were coyotes.
Because I was going to say, if it's the pictures I'm thinking of, man, it was pretty clearly.
Yeah, one of the pictures was like a black one.
Exactly.
And like
exactly.
A tri-colored one, and they quite large. From the investigation that right. was done, not knowing, like not putting eyes on them and not seeing them, say, potentially on a kill.
We cannot confirm could, beyond
yeah, to
a
where
shadow
you could
of a
get,
doubt.
Like, no doubt this is, he was feeding
was right here.
Yeah. So we have DNA, saliva DNA. They could only go with what they had available to them in the locations that they were told these animals were in.
Right.
And from that right. information, everything that came back was deemed coyote.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, and then prior to that was the wolves that were seen on Fox Mountain in
right.
northwest Nevada in 2016 or 2017.
Okay.
And nothing came from that. It was just went out, they evaluated it, went out, looked, and it was only one animal.
Mm-hmm.
So it was deemed just an animal passing through from California
gotcha.
To possibly up into Oregon or Idaho or something.
They never found any wolf sign or whatever. They never confirmed that either.
No, because I think on that one in particular, it wasn't as if they had pictures and they could match it to a mountain or, you know, because usually
gotcha.
You can see in the background.
Right.
Like, oh, hey, man. That's,
terrain features.
Yeah, exactly. That's like Joe Schmo Canyon. Okay, so he's going to be over here somewhere. It was more of, this is what we saw. It was over in this general vicinity.
Right.
So it wasn't as clear cut as the Merritt Mountain investigation.
Maybe I'm thinking of different pictures, but yeah, man, those pictures I saw, if that was the Merritt Mountain one, man, they were...
I remember those pictures as well, because there was two or three of them,
yeah.
And I remember one distinct, like,
that
all
black coat. Yep.
And I was like, dang.
That's not a coyote.
Dang.
Yeah.
You got to confirm it. I mean,
right.
again, the 99.9% chance is they were just cruising through. Reason being is here we are, 2026... and no one's ever seen them again. They used Nevada as a transitional zone.
I got to imagine that the garbage area.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's like low-hanging fruit
dude,
for a wolf pack.
Every time I've been in that area, I'm like, how is this not? How is this not supporting wolves and wolverines or something? This area is just...
I'm just
awesome.
Surprised with all the elk hunters and deer hunters and everything. I've never heard anything about wolves in garbage or pictures. You know what I mean? It's always these kind of off locations where you're like, okay, yeah, that's probably a transient wolf. But you think like, man, if they're coming into Nevada, you think you'd see a handful of pictures coming out of garbage every
year. You would.
And I don't.
Here's a side note. This is my gripe because I believe in Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah. Dave, go there.
I believe in Bigfoot. How is it we're getting these crystal clear pictures of wolves and other critters across a canyon, and we can't get a clear picture of a Bigfoot? Why is every single Bigfoot picture a blur? Why? I mean, why?
What's the magic of it, Dave?
It's as my gorgeous wife always tells me, she says, Dave, it's Hollywood. And I'm like, it can't be Hollywood because Bigfoot's real. I know he's real.
I'll do you one better. How does Santa leave crisp size 10 Kennetrek boot prints in the powder laid out by my fireplace every single year? My kids find it every year. How do I get that? But I can't get anything other than like a crappy... mold of a Bigfoot thing? That's weird to me.
Yeah.
So
yeah, well, because your kids saw me wearing Kennetrex.
That's
like,
a fact.
Oh, it's Dave.
Yeah. It's the red one Santa come to visit. Hey, all right, let's, with the time we got left, Dave, pyramid stuff. Like I told you, man, my neighbor was pulling out of his driveway this morning. This weather we're having, I think we're getting into that. It's going to be big fish season.
Yeah, I've been out several times this year on the ladders, and I have watched people all around me pulling in some beautiful fish.
Yep.
As we all know it's generally on an overcast day, a little chilly, maybe a touch
wind
of wind.
In your face.
Not saying I haven't caught anything. I have, but it's not picture worthy.
Right, right.
You know, it's like, oh, that was nice. Let it go.
Yep.
I have definitely witnessed some big fish getting taken. There's 10, 12, 14 pounders. And
that's a good fish. Yeah.
Yeah. And it seems, you're right, it seems as if watching it online lately, Pyramid Lake pages and such, that folks are, it's starting to rev up with a little bit of this colder temps that we're getting.
Yep.
So I'm definitely planning on heading back out, probably grabbing Pat. He's always a good
Pat's
fisherman.
He's retired. He's
yeah,
good for
he's
that.
He's a good
yeah.
buddy to go fishing with and stuff. It's just, I've got to figure out a better setup. I've got the the custom pyramid pole, 10 feet, 8 inches. And it's custom made for Pyramid. So I'm like, okay, it's not my rod. It's definitely me.
You
like,
got Wanamaker's ladder or
yeah,
a ladder
I got
two.
I got okay. Wanamaker's, and he's caught some significant fish on those ladders. So I yep. figured, okay, this juju's going to come up through my feet. Yeah, and it yeah. hasn't.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't know if my setup's wrong. I'm not placing things far enough apart or too, I don't know, but I'm still having a blast, but they are doing really well out there. And I know from the conversations I've had with some folks out there, it is the darker, like olives and blacks seem to be.
That's what they're whacking.
And the browns.
Yeah.
That seems to be the ticket.
Well, I got
to
get out with you guys, man. I was good for a while. Pyramid was my jam for a hot minute there. And then, honestly, post-COVID, when they changed that whole thing and now it's the day rate and all that, I kind of got out of the swing of things and I just kind of quit knocking around out there. So
yeah.
You've revitalized my interest as far as like, oh, I was scrolling through my a folder on my phone with adventure pictures, fishing pictures and stuff. And I went, oh, I remember that day. Oh, I remember that day. Oh, I got to get back out there and do that again.
Yeah.
It's just, man, that whole day rate thing.
Oh, that's, yeah, I remember I used to love just doing the year pass and just going out whenever.
80 some odd bucks.
Yeah,
yeah,
that was it.
Man, Dave, let's wrap up and get out of here. Thank you to Truck Envy for sponsoring the show. You probably beat the snot out of your rig this last hunting season. Go see Andy and the boys at Truck Envy and get everything outfitted for this upcoming season. And do not go anywhere. Tom Gresham's Gun Talk is coming up next on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.